I mentioned in my this Oracle deck, Oracle of the Mythic Heroes, right? Myths are never true, but always will be, because we are essentially, after thousands of years, still repeating our stories and our histories. And just like the repetitive circling of the earth around the sun, we are our own myth, and I still believe so. We want more than just surviving at a materialistic level, and we need spiritual nutrition to enrich our mind and our emotional health. And without this grounding in mythology's timeless stories, I've seen clients experience a sense of detachment, for example, confusion about their purpose, and the malaise regarding, you know, their place in the world. And this is where we, when we recognize, right, and that this connection there. And so reconnecting with mythology can be a path to healing.
Welcome to Living 4D with Paul Check. Today's guest is professional astrologist Letao Wong. Letao is also a tarot specialist and the founder and spiritual counselor of the Healing Kingdom. Based in Hong Kong, he has been providing astrology, tarot, and numerology readings for clients since 2015. Letao was named the best astrologer and tarot specialist in 2021 by Hong Kong Most Outstanding Business Award, Spiritual Guide of the Year in 2020 by Hong Kong's Living Magazine, and was given the Hong Kong Influencers Award in 2019 and 2020 by Hong Kong Living Magazine. A big thank you to our premier sponsors, Bioptimizers, Paleo Valley, and Organifi. We could not produce this podcast without their support. And of course, Paul only works with companies whose products he loves and uses. All the sponsors offer special discounts for our listeners, so please visit the show notes page at checkinstitute.com/podcast for links and details, or just keep listening to this episode for the featured products and offers. Today's episode is entitled Myth, Truth or Fallacy.
Hello, everybody. I have an incredible gem of a human being to share with you today, which is Letao Wong. Letao, do you pronounce your last name Wang or Wong?
In Chinese, it's pronounced Wong, yeah, but doesn't matter. Everyone calls me whatever they want. Yeah, that's fine.
I didn't want to torture your name. Yeah. I got Letao right.
Yeah.
Perfect. So I just wanted to share with you guys, Letao, because I'll tell you a quick story. You know, as my podcast has become successful over the years, I get more and more emails every day from book publishers and media representatives, managers and people like that. I must get, I don't know, 20 or 30 of them a day. And I hit the delete button pretty fast because I can see right away most of the stuff's not interesting to me at all. So mostly miracle pills and gadgets and widgets. And then one day I was hitting the delete and I saw the word myth right in the beginning, which to me is one of my most favorite fields of study. And so I read it, and the lady was talking about this new deck of cards, the Oracle of Mythic Heroes, for those of you that might see the video, I'm holding it in my hand. And I thought, well, that's great, because, you know, I've got lots of books on the Greek mythic heroes, and I've flipped through them, but I haven't had a chance to really study them. But for a variety of reasons, I was very called to investigate. So I wrote back to the agent who was representing you, Letao, and said, well, first thing I'm going to do, I'm interested for sure, but I want to look at the book, the guidebook, and I want to look at the cards, and then I'll go from there. So I got a hold of it and started reading it, and I was just so impressed right away. And I was really impressed with the teaching section on each myth, because it was very clear to me that you have real skill as a counselor and guide to people, and you really work with these myths in very tangible ways that really impact people's lives. And anyone listening knows I study a lot and have read a lot of books. So, I've been a coach and therapist for 40 years. So I wouldn't be giving you the credit unless the credit was due, because I can get the surgeon's knife out and start cutting as needed too. But, I've started a special notebook, Letao, and I've been studying these myths, and I'm on 25, I think, now, because I study one a day and I take notes and I leave myself messages about how to do it. I'm on Icarus.
Ah, right.
And I've read some of them further along. So I've actually read maybe 26, mm-hmm. but I've studied them very well because they're such powerful stories. And they're, you know, anyone with two brain cells holding hand can read any one of these myths and see how every one of them has something to do with some aspect of our life, with situations we've been in, with personality traits we have, or even shadow traits, virtues or vices.
Right.
Some of them are, you know, we could say moral principles, like, you know, should you kill your own children because you've got taken revenge on your husband? And anyone that's read the Bible, there's all sorts of this stuff throughout the Bible. And so the problem is when people start believing things like that literally versus allegorically, metaphorically, or as a means of making you think about how people handle certain situations in their life, you know?
Yep.
So, you know, first thought I had was when I found out you were not in an English speaking country, I was worried would he be able to speak English, but I was so amazed that you can speak English so well because you live in Hong Kong. And I read your bio in the back, and you've got a lot of great education. So I think to begin with, I'd love it if you can share your background with the audience, because you have quite an impressive, diverse education, and you're a spiritual counselor. So I'd love to hear a little, share with the audience kind of your biography of Letao, how you got into all these different degree programs you've been in, what led you to spiritual counseling, and how do you see myths as integral to your life and your practice?
Absolutely, yeah. Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me today on your podcast. Paul, I've been looking forward to this for such a long time. First of all, I actually was born, you know, my childhood was very different because I was born in a very, very traditional Chinese family. And my early childhood education really just revolved around Orthodox Chinese literature, which is a far cry from, you know, Western mythology or fantasy and astrology, right? And I've only finished high school in China around the age of 18, I think, and I just felt something was missing. You know, I don't know if a lot of people can resonate with that. It's a little bit like I'm sitting on my couch in my home, but I feel I need to look for my home. I wasn't able to connect with the things that I studied, and also even just with the environment that I was living in. And so, you know, and I have this, you know, thirst for cross-cultural experiences now, which when I was 18, I think it was 18, 19, led me to cross the ocean to Japan to do my undergraduate studies. And, I really immersed myself in this, you know, completely new environment. And I also learned, you know, the myth and the legends from Japanese culture, you know, cause, you know, Japan is a country that is rich in its own, storytelling and things like that, right? Mythology. That was my first big change in my life. When I, moved to Japan at such a young age, and I studied in Japan, I was studying a translation and interpreting studies. At that time, my dream was to become a simultaneous interpreter. Hopefully I would be able to work for the United Nations. That was really the dream at that time. And after that, you know, finished university and all that, I decided to pursue my first master's degree in, again, translation interpreting. And so I moved to Australia, Sydney. And that's when I actually met my first spiritual teacher. So that was already when I was 23, 24, I think. And I never knew anything about spirituality or the mystical side of life, because, you know, my education was all about passing exams and, you know, things like that. And so, yeah, so that's, I encountered my first astrology teacher in Sydney, and I became a little bit like an apprentice while I was still doing my translation studies. That started this whole thing, basically. Yeah.
That's amazing. You mentioned either personally to me, or maybe I read it, I can't remember, but there was a story about you going to Greece and wanting to go to a certain place.
Correct. Yeah. So that was,
tell us that story.
Right. So that was way, actually much later. Yeah. So I was after I opened my business, The Healing Kingdom. And because I've always had this dream to really visit the ancient ruins and to see the stories and hear the stories from the local Greek people, because that's where the Greek mythology, and sometimes even when we talk about Roman mythology, where they came from. And so the first time I went to Greece was back in 2017, because, you know, from Hong Kong to Athens is a long way, and we don't even have a direct flight, right? So at that time for me, it was almost like a pilgrimage.
Even on a plane, it was a long one.
Yeah. And not knowing anything. So I just, I packed my bag and just went. And that was, I would say such a fascinating and mesmerizing trip for me. I didn't really go to any of those, you know, beach resorts and things like that. I just wanted to see this, very famous ancient site, called, the Temple of Apollo, which is located in Delphi or Delphi, according to Greek people, that's how they pronounce it. And I actually went to Delphi on my birthday, because I specifically chose that day. I wanted to be special, and the energy there was just amazing. You could feel something different there, and it was very steep, so you had to climb all the way up to see the Temple of Apollo. And there was even though it was, you know, a ruin, right, it was just big rocks and some pillars there, but the energy was just beyond expression. Yeah,
that's cool. Well, it seems to me that since the Industrial Revolution began, humanity has lost interest in and connection to our mythic roots. In fact, many people today use the term myth to mean something that is a lie or something untrue. Can you define what a myth is and what the consequences of losing touch with our mythic roots is, and how we can recognize the symptoms of mythic disconnection in the psyche of human beings today?
Well, I believe a myth is fundamentally a narrative framework, right, that carries a profound truth, the symbols and archetypes of a culture. This offers us guidance to navigate the complexities of all existence, our moral dilemmas, and the universal human experience, just, you know, generally speaking. And I think mythology always connects us to the collective conscience of our ancestors and the universe itself. And speaking of the disconnection, right, I think this disconnection comes from our mythic roots that has come to pass for a long time. I was an example of that, as I was only able to connect myth and life in my late 20s. And of course, we all read myth as kids, right? As when we were children. And in my case, those ancient Chinese stories that I read, you know, the Red Chamber, A Dream of the Red Chamber, the Three Kingdoms, those Chinese stories. But we tend to stop in there, right? And believing that they were simply for entertainment purposes, especially if, as an adult, you tell someone, at least in my culture, you tell people that you read mythology, you might even be deemed as immature or childish, I think. Yeah. Absolutely.
Funny.
Yeah, because mythology in Chinese culture is a bit like for children. You know, it's like children's book. So in my childhood, I think if I held a mythological storybook and read it in my room, my parents would probably likely to tell me to stop right away and ask me to solve math problems or whatever. So that's just some kind of like, you know, stereotype, right? And I mentioned in this oracle deck, Oracle of the Mythic Heroes, right? Myths are never true, but always will be, because we are essentially, after thousands of years, still repeating our stories and our histories. And just like the repetitive circling of the earth around the sun, we are our own myth. And I still believe so. We want more than just surviving at a materialistic level. And we need spiritual nutrition to enrich our mind and our emotional health. And without this grounding in mythology's timeless stories, I've seen clients experience a sense of detachment, for example, confusion about their purpose, and the malaise regarding, you know, their place in the world. And this is where when we recognize, right, this disconnection there. And so reconnecting with mythology can be a path to healing. And astrology, which is deeply connected with ancient mythology, provides us a unique tool for its reconnection. And as it links individuals to the larger cosmic story that myth also aimed to articulate. And so by understanding the archetype forces at play in their lives, people can always find a deeper sense of purpose and belonging.
Yeah. One of the things that I've used in the past is medical astrology. Mm. And it made me curious, and I'm wondering if you've made the connection. But for example, I'm a Leo, and the constellation of Leo in medical astrology is the guiding energy that forms the human heart.
Mm, correct. Yeah.
And so when you look through the astrological connections to the physical parts of the body, you see that there's this linkage there. Now, I could go off into a whole long story about, because a lot of people think that kind of stuff is silly. Mm. Fortunately, the people listening to my podcast are a lot smarter than most. But the question I have you noticed a correlation between where people are suffering from diseases and illnesses, the constellation that links with that medically through astrology, and the myth that maybe is pointing to the issue of the heart or the lungs or the bowel, etc.?
Well, I've actually seen that a lot when I use tarot, right? Do readings for
I'm
clients.
I'm a tarot lover.
Yeah. So, for example, I remember this so clearly. I had a client. She came to me and she said, "You know, I don't have any, you know, mental issues or whatever, but I'm physically sick, right? And so my health is not very good. And I just want to know, what do you see from the cards?" Right. So that's a very unique reading, because usually people come to me for readings because they have something difficult more at a mental level or a spiritual level that they are trying to resolve. Because if someone has physical problems, the first choice probably is not going to see a counselor, but go to see a doctor, right? But she said, "I don't need a diagnosis. I already know what I have. I've been to the hospitals. I know I'm receiving treatment now, but I just want to see what you can see from the cards."
Right.
So I said, "Okay, so let's do this." And I remember very, very clearly on the, we only did three cards. And the second card was called, was strength. And the third card was four of pentacles. And the first card on the left side, it was the devil. And I looked at this spread. I said to her, I said, "You have a growth in you, don't you?" Because, you know, in tarot, when we look at, you know, for example, tumor or something growing in our body, not in a good way, we usually see four of pentacles in a health check. And especially—
Is that right? That's such an odd correlation. How do you make that correlation? Because four of pentacles, four is a number of wholeness and stability.
Yeah, you have to look at the picture, right? So you can see there's a man holding onto a golden coin. So this represents in its negative way, it's talking about the energy that is stuck. It doesn't flow. So when you have something growing in our body, it means that the things are stuck in there. They don't disappear, right? So usually in the health reading, when we study tarot, right, when it comes to health issues, four of pentacles usually is talking about some kind of growth, especially if it's sitting together with the devil card. It's talking about a growth that is very difficult to get rid of. Now, it's not necessarily talking about a tumor or cancer, but you know what I mean, yeah? And so I looked at her.
Yeah, so-
yeah, but of course, it was very difficult for me to ask her, "Do you have cancer?" So I said to her, I said, "You have got something like growing in your body, but it's very difficult to get rid of." And the strength card in the middle is literally talking about your body, trying to fight it. And I said, "Are you going to have a surgery soon?" And she said, "You are spot on. I do have a tumor, but I'm not going to have surgery. I'm trying to use herbalism, you know, Chinese medicine, whatever," right? And so that's, you know, the time when actually, you know, tarot and the myth can be related to our physical health. And this also happens in Chinese astrology and Chinese fortune telling system. Because in the Western system, you have four elements, right? The fire, the water, the earth, and the air. In Chinese fortune telling, we have five elements. We have water, fire, metal, right? Earth, and then we also have wood. So these five. And so actually, when we look at someone's element from the Chinese astrological perspective, this has a lot to do with our physical health. For example, when someone has too much earth energy in them, according to Chinese mythology, it usually shows that they have a weak stomach or a weak digestive system. And fire element is related to our heart, which is the same as Western astrology. Yeah? And water element is related to, for example, our kidney, which is also similar to, the Western astrology kidney and, passing urine, things like that, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. So definitely we have seen that a lot. Yeah.
Hello, everybody. Would you like to learn how to connect directly with your soul and highest self to gain guidance in your daily life and feel more grounded and spiritually connected? Are you ready to learn how to communicate with your soul and develop a language of direct communication that you can use to progressively develop your innate spiritual abilities such as clairvoyance, clairsentience, clairaudience, and heightened intuition? Would you like a practical means of asking your own soul your deepest questions about all aspects of your life, life in general, or gain support from your soul in making critical decisions in your life? If you answered yes to these questions, then I have a very special offer for you. I will be offering my Tarot for Soul Guidance training program in which I share the specific methods of using tarot as a functional language to communicate directly with your soul as an online training program so that anyone can learn and practice in the comfort of their own home. I have deeply studied and practiced tarot for over 8 years. Additionally, I have been working directly with my soul for my own guidance and to support others in their healing and spiritual growth for over 30 years. I have taught Tarot for Soul Guidance to countless patients and students and have received amazing feedback from each of them that engage this practice. See the website for testimonials. I have chosen to offer this workshop online because I found there wasn't enough time in my previous 2-day live version for the students to digest the volume of information and practice it. My new format is specifically designed to make learning more enjoyable, easier, and give you specific practices you can work with between training sessions. This allows you to develop your skills in a step-by-step format and be able to ask all your questions so you feel grounded and confident in your tarot practice each day. Tarot for Soul Guidance will be conducted online over 7 consecutive Fridays starting May 3rd and ending June 14th. Each 4-hour training session will run from 2 o'clock p.m. to 6 o'clock p.m. Pacific Standard Time for a total of 28 hours of training. All sessions will be recorded so students that can't make a session for any reason can study and practice when it fits their schedule. Students will be given access to session recordings for a period of time after the training ends to reinforce their new practices and skills. The course includes a comprehensive PDF manual with numerous diagrams to help students understand key concepts related to tarot theory and practice. I will explain the anatomy and practice of tarot so anyone can understand it. The training provides all you need to know to engage tarot as a legitimate spiritual practice in which you learn to maintain and deepen connection to your soul and your highest self. There are many step-by-step developmental practices you will learn so that by the time you finish the 28-hour program, you will be proficient in your practice of using tarot. You will have a language for intimate communication with your soul for daily guidance. I will teach you how to use tarot as a means of getting guidance and support from your soul in any aspect of your life, including how to gain an understanding of your future and what you may need to prepare for. Conduct a daily reading and learn ways to best manage yourself to be in harmony with your highest intentions for yourself and others. Gain information and guidance on how to make important decisions in your life. Support others through soul-guided tarot communication and how to progressively deepen your spiritual connection to your soul and highest self as a legitimate daily spiritual practice you can use anytime, anywhere. Course participants have the option to purchase the tarot deck and guidebook I recommend and use for the course directly from us with free shipping, or you can purchase the required items from another seller if you prefer. To register and see more information on the course and testimonials from those that have completed Tarot for Soul Guidance training with me, go to bit.ly/PaulCHEK workshops. That's bit.ly/PaulCHEK workshops and scroll down to the tarot workshop offering. If you are ready to deepen your connection to your soul and your highest self, have a legitimate spiritual practice, and get support to live your dreams and be the person you came to the world to be, this workshop is for you.
I look forward to seeing you in the training.
From a mythological perspective, you know, the devil card, that really relates to freedom. And so what I would interpret from what you've shared is, you see, if I saw those three cards, I would my first thought would be, where are you binding yourself in your life? Eight, strength is the symbol of the soul guiding the ego. I would say you're binding yourself. The lesson is to take guidance from your highest self or your soul.
Yeah, yeah.
And create. And then I would say that the third card would be, and that will bring you into a state of stability in your life.
I see. Well, of course, you know, of course, we can read tarot always in a metaphorical way, right? So, for example, when we see Four of Pentacles, we think this is about financial stability. And that's one of the interpretations. But I have to say, one of the breakthroughs that I have had in reading tarot was learning how to be more literal with the cards. Sometimes we don't have to go thousands of miles away from the original picture. Because, you know, for example, when we think about the devil, we think about that psychological bondage, our inner fear, right? And how do we break through that? That's a very high-level interpretation, right? At a very psychological level. Sometimes devil can just be as simple as something that doesn't go away.
Because that's something, a good point, yeah.
You know, right? And also, for example, we can use an example of, let's say, the Emperor card from Tarot, right? When we look at Emperor, a lot of people say, yeah, you are, right? And a lot of people say, okay, so this is, you know, the divine masculine, you know, the control, right? The power in the society, whatever, right? Again, that's all true, but that's too metaphorical. And sometimes we read them at that level too much. The Emperor energy, some of them can be as simple as your boss. And when we look at a spread there, when we have Emperor, and let's say when we have Five of Swords next to it, the first thing that comes to my mind is, did you just have a fight with your boss?
Yeah.
Rather than, you know what I mean? Rather than thinking, oh, this is some kind of divine masculine energy, but you're not using it well. You need to balance yourself. Because sometimes clients don't need that. They need things as plain as and as simple as possible. And so that's when I had my breakthrough when it comes to reading tarot. Yeah. And there's a very famous author that I really liked. She wrote several books about tarot. Her name is Light Angelis. Light Angelis, yeah. So she's from the UK, yeah. I think she's like, I don't know if she's a witch, but she's like, sort of like kind of, you know, psychic and, you know, a medium, you know, that kind of lady. And she wrote several tarot books, and I really enjoyed reading her book because that's where she literally talked about these kind of literal things that you can interpret in the cards. Because we don't
have
that.
I'll have a look into that.
Yeah, because all the tarot books I realize on the market, they're too metaphorical. They're too high level, right? Like, for example, also Chariot. For example, a client can be asking, you know, where do you see the best place for me to live in? And, you know, and you pull, let's say, the Chariot card. You know, in the metaphorical way, you can't really tell where that is. Where is the Chariot? But actually, the Chariot card, in the when it comes to connecting with locations and places, it's about desert. Places that are very dry and desert-like. And a lot of times we see this card related to the Middle East countries. UAE, you know, those regions, et cetera, et cetera.
It's amazing how diverse tarot is. I've been studying it for many, many years, and I've got, I've been doing daily readings now, I don't know, over 5 years. I've got 15 volumes of my notes from all my studies, but I could talk to you about tarot forever. I'd like to know what, with that lady that you talked about that you did the tarot reading on, what myth do you feel from your guidebook would be one that you would suggest that she study or look into or might correlate with her?
Interesting. So that card, as you're doing that session, at the end of the session, we used the Oracle of the Mythic Heroes. And she put out the card for Penelope. And the keyword is faith. And that just made a lot of sense to me. And she told me what she did. She was actually also a counselor. She was doing a lot of spiritual work, and she doesn't live in Hong Kong, actually. So I think she lives in Switzerland or somewhere in Europe. And, you know, she has been, before her spiritual journey, she worked in charity as a social worker. And after that, she started her own practice. But unfortunately, you know, she was diagnosed with this, this illness, right? And, you know, when she came to me, she didn't have hair. She was wearing a cap or something, right? Because she didn't want me to see, you know, what happened with her. And yeah. so the fact that she put out Penelope really struck me, because Penelope was about this deep belief in us without knowing the guarantee. See, Penelope had no guarantee that her husband would come back to her. 10 years, everyone was trying to convince her that her husband Odysseus would not come back because he died in the war. You should remarry, right? Marry someone else, right? You're still young and beautiful. You're wasting your time sitting here alone. But somehow Penelope had this strong faith and intuition in her. She knew that Odysseus hasn't died and he would come back. And that's the end of the story. Odysseus came back and they had a happy ending. And I really feel that she was a Penelope there, and she was the one holding this strong faith in herself about, I know I have cancer, or I know I have a tumor in me, and I have no guarantee that this will be cured, and I don't know when I will die, but I know that there's something that I want to pursue before I leave this world. And this just, this very strong energy through this card, right? You know, during our conversation. Yeah, it was an amazing session that I had with her. Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. You know, it's you know, this is the difference between just treating the body and addressing the issues of the soul.
Huh. Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, and I think that's one of the main problems with Western medicine, is it's really just based on chemistry. And isolated anatomy. The Western system doesn't really even understand functional anatomy or how the body parts work together. That's why you have all these surgeons for every part of the body, and they hardly ever talk to each other.
Yeah.
But I've never met but one or two in my whole career that actually understood the connection, say, for example, between the liver and the right shoulder and arm, or the stomach and the left shoulder and arm.
100%.
Or
the
digestive organs and the function of the abdominal muscles.
Yeah.
Or the bladder and the pelvic girdle. They always think these things are completely separate. And I think, you know, when you realize that matter, as the alchemists taught for thousands of years, matter cannot organize itself. There has to be a guiding intelligence. There has to be something to form it. And the body is material, but what's in it and organizing it is spiritual. And so when you realize, you know, if you think of a crystal, like crystallographers have been studying crystals for a very long time, and the big mystery is, what is the organizing intelligence that makes a crystal a unique molecular structure with high order? And, you know, many have posited the idea that it's an entelechy, a guiding intelligence.
Right.
Which I agree. And I think everything in nature has a guiding intelligence. I think the whole universe does, or it wouldn't be organized as it is for life. So I think why this is so important is because when we look at the mythological correlations between the situations in people's lives, like you just described, and the kind of challenges they're having in their health and in their relationships, you actually see how they're either in tune with and flowing with these archetypal forces, or for whatever reason, it may be belief, programming, fear, trauma, they're working against them like a duck trying to paddle up, swim upstream. It's very hard to do. You know, a trout knows how to use those forces for its benefit, but a duck either has to fly or go with the water, or it'll just burn out. And so I think a lot of the problem that we have is people without mythological roots and a grounding in these virtues and an understanding of the vices that are on the other side of every virtue, and even moral principles, end up, you know, either taking shortcuts or getting stuck in belief systems that disconnect them from their heart and from the deeper aspects of the psyche. And so they live sort of out of the ego, which they don't realize is everybody else's ideas. I mean, everything. I challenge my students all the time. I say, of all the ideas that you have in your head, if I could download your mind into a supercomputer and take every one of your thoughts and put them before you on a spreadsheet, what percentage of them would be authentically of your own making? versus something you've copied from somebody else. Most of my students guess probably only 1 or 2% of all the thoughts that come through my mind are actually originally mine.
Yeah.
And so I say, there you go. That's the problem.
Yeah.
And so when people get caught living other people's ideas, they're out of touch with the needs and the flow of their own heart, their own spirit, their own soul. And so they become the duck swimming upstream, wondering why it's not getting anywhere and, you know, metaphorically burning out.
Right,
so
I see
this, you know, I've studied myth for a long, long time because I saw this as a therapist. There was always a story behind people's problems, particularly chronic problems, right?
Right.
Now, if someone fell off a ladder, that may or may not be connected to myth or soul, depending on how you want to slice it. But when someone has Crohn's disease or they've got, osteoarthritis or rheumatoid arthritis or autoimmune disorder, and this has been going on either for 20 years or their whole life, I immediately, from all my career's work, found I've got to figure out what is it that they're enacting? What's the belief that's driving the choices and the behaviors that is creating this pathology? Because the body wants to be healthy. Nobody's body does not want to be healthy. And so I found over and over again, and actually years and years ago, I found an amazing book that's based on Rudolf Steiner's teachings. And it goes through every one of the glands and organs in the body. And Steiner had written a mythological story about that gland or organ. Mm. And so I started studying that book and I went, man, this thing's bang on. So I started, for example, he suggests that problems with the small intestine often come from people who have fear of criticism. They don't take criticism well. And so sure enough, I found most of the people that I had with small intestine problems, when I started questioning them, had had some kind of a trauma with school teachers or parents that were overly critical. And now whenever they're always worried about how they look or if they're doing well enough, and they can never really relax inside. So they've got all this tension built up in their small intestine, which disturbs peristalsis, can overexcite the immune system and lead to leaky gut syndrome, can lead to drinking too much coffee and alcohol to abate the stress. Point being is I found these connections left, right, and center. I started using a medical astrologer in 1988 because I had patients coming to me that, A, had spent a lot of money, often seeing a lot of doctors, many of which were actually reputable.
Mm.
B, I had tried getting them on the right diet and doing everything that I normally do, but I always sensed there's something not right here. Because the body's not responding like a body should be responding to this level of commitment from the patient and doing things this accurately, because I know what I am doing. And every time I went to my favorite medical astrologer, Ernst Wilhelm, a Vedic astrologer, he pinned the tail right on the donkey. And so I learned right away that I have really got to put more of my time, energy, and headspace into understanding the archetypal roots of humanity and the psyche itself. So I've been studying Jung for about 30 years and Steiner for probably almost as long. And I found these things to be more commonly the issues with patients than anything else. So this is why I thought it would be so interesting to talk to you, and why one of the things I love about your guidebook is, you know, I can read one of those myths probably in 15 minutes. So it's not like a real big commitment, but you've encapsulated these things down to where all the key pieces of the myth are there, the story's intact. And that's nice, but the beautiful part of what you've done is that even though the myth is concise, what really brings it home for me is the teaching, the counseling, and how you correlate it with case histories. Because it gives the person who's not very initiated into myth a way to see how this actually plays out in somebody's life.
Right.
And even for me, I'm reading your book going, oh man, I can think of Mrs. Smith and Bob and Bill, and I can connect it to, you know, a whole line of patients, go, wow, I wish I would have known about this myth 20 years ago. I could have helped this guy from a different perspective.
Right.
And I've already turned on lots of my friends to your book, and every one of them's And I've even started using it in my coaching practice, and everybody's like, oh my God, that's too true. Some of them, I'll have them read the myth out loud, and they don't want to read it because they're like, oh my God, because they're like, this is me, even though I don't like it.
Well, I think that's really the purpose, right? I mean, when I created this deck, I personally, I can always connect the myth with what's actually happening around us. And I really feel like what I said earlier, we are the same after thousands of years. We're still repeating the same lessons and we're still learning the same lessons. And it's surprising that we haven't mastered them, right? After all this
time. It's very surprising.
Right? Yeah. I'll give an example, because I also believe that, we have maybe a lot of audience who are parents, right? And who have, children and who are dealing with them on a daily basis. I had a client just 2 days ago, and this is a mother. She was a little bit, she was kind of devastated because her son is about, I think, 5 or 6 years old, and he has just been diagnosed autism. And this mother, she was devastated because she couldn't accept it. And so she had this problem accepting the fact that her son is, let's use her word, abnormal, because she feels, my son, I don't want my child to be autistic, and I don't want to send my kid to a school for, children with special needs. She told me she wants to send her son to a normal school. Normal school? That's not the right word to use, but you know what I mean. Yeah. And suddenly I had this connection in my mind between her and this mythological story between Achilles and his mother, Thetis. Because when Achilles was born, right? Achilles was a demigod. He was half divine, but he was not full divine. It means that he's still mortal. So that's why his mother, Thetis, as a goddess, brought him to the river Styx and dipped him in the water, hoping that she would be able to make the child a divine. But because she was holding Achilles by his heel, so that part remained untouched by the magical water. And that's why we say Achilles' heel, right? Because that part, only that part is still, is not divine, but the other parts of Achilles, they were all invincible and immortal. And so it's a little bit like, maybe as a parent, we all want our child to be divine, and we can't accept the fact that our child is not better than anyone else. And when we know that our child is not, and we're trying to do everything to try to fix them and make them normal. But sometimes that action and that intention itself could become actually their weakness, just like Achilles heel.
Yeah.
Right. And so this is what I do. I look at a client and listen to their stories, and I connect that with an ancient myth, and I'll share that story with the client. And hopefully that will give them some kind of hint or understanding about what they're doing. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it gives them a deeper understanding.
Absolutely. Yeah. And the good thing is a lot of them enjoy, stories. So that's, I think myth is really, really helpful in that sense.
It reminds me of the story of, you may have heard it before, but there's a story in Buddhism about a woman whose child had died, and her husband, I think she didn't have a husband. I can't remember that part of the story. But she just, even days after the child had died, she was just walking everywhere from door to door begging for help, if anybody could help to bring this child back to life.
Right.
And everybody said, no, there's nothing you can do. The child's dead. And finally, after going from door to door for days on end, somebody said, well, there's a very great spiritual teacher who will be coming here to teach next week. I recommend you bring your child to him. And so she did. And so when she met the Buddha, she was still carrying her dead, probably now very smelly, rotting child. And she was asking Buddha to please help. And he said to her, I will help you on one condition. You've got to go to every house in the village until you can find somebody who's never been touched by death. And if you can find me a person in any of these huts that hasn't lost someone or been touched by death, then I will help you with your child. And so she went out and she went door to door through the whole township And finally, at the end, she came back to Buddha and he said, what did you find? She said, there was nobody who hadn't lost a child or somebody in their family. And she said, I realized now I've just got to let go and move forward in my life. And he said, correct.
You're right.
That's your help.
Acceptance, right? And that's one of the biggest thing to deal with clients. I think it's about acceptance. It's you know, people who have just lost a family member. Because the interesting thing about this type of clients is that you can't change the reality. For some clients, you know, through their personal action, you know, through guidance, they might able to change things in their lives. But losing a family member, you know, due to sickness or whatever, you can't change that. And the only way for us to do is to not to forget about this, but learn how to live with that. And I think that's something.
Can't forget about some things. It's impossible. I mean, my brother committed suicide. If someone told me to forget about it, I would say, I'll tell you what, I'll give you $1 million if you can show me how to do that.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
It's just too deep in us, you know?
100%. Yeah.
Each relationship is a piece of our soul, you know? So to forget something that's a piece of your soul is like forgetting that you have a mouth to feed, you know?
100%. Yeah. And I think it's about how do we live our life? How do I describe that? It's a little bit like, how do we want to move forward with that and honor their lives, right? And transform that into either motivation or good memories. And instead of mourning over their lives, I think we should celebrate their lives. And that's the first step for a lot of the clients who are experiencing similar issues in life. Yeah.
Hello, everybody. After countless requests, I'm super excited to announce our How to Eat, Move, and Be Healthy online training program. This program is designed specifically for anyone that wants to learn how to eat, move, and be healthy, and is perfect as a learning opportunity for the whole family. In my 40 years as a holistic health practitioner, I've always been saddened and amazed that there is no real basic health training in our education systems that teaches people how to care for their body and enjoy the freedom that only health can give. Anyone will be able to follow my How to Eat, Move, and Be Healthy online and learn many ways to apply what I share in my book. And to give you even more support, this offer includes a free How to Eat, Move, and Be Healthy ebook to help reinforce your learning process. In fact, if you've not yet read my book, How to Eat, Move, and Be Healthy, you can take this special 6-week How to Eat, Move, and Be Healthy online training program and get instant coaching on how you, your family, and friends can look and feel your best. You will not only learn from me personally, but you will learn from Angie Check, Head of Holistic Lifestyle Coaching at the Check Institute, Matthew Walden, Head of Education for the Check Institute, and Joe Rushton, who is a Check Institute instructor and certified chef. All our presenters in this course are highly skilled and add tremendous value to this excellent training program. How to Eat, Move, and Be Healthy online will be available as of January the 9th. This course is $495, but as a Living 4D listener, you get a special launch discount of 40% off and can make 3 payments of $99. Again, you get a free How to Eat, Move, and Be Healthy ebook to help you look and feel your best and support your learning with the online training program. This offer is only available until January the 31st. Take advantage of this incredible offer and get started creating the new you. Go to CHEK/4D-EMBH. Once again, that's CHEK.group/L4D-EMBH. I have received countless letters from people around the world about how they healed many things that ailed them and how they look and feel better and have much more energy. And many mothers told me that How to Eat, Move, and Be Healthy has been a miracle for their children too. Enjoy this opportunity to make your 2024 a year of health, vitality and enjoy a new level of freedom that you have never had before.
Now, Littell, your work seems to be primarily focused on Greek mythology. Is there a reason you focused on Greek mythology versus myths of other cultures of the world?
Huh.
And why do you feel Greek mythology is still relevant to us today?
Well, first of all, you know, as simple as it sounds, my first astrological teacher was a mythologist, right? And so So he taught me everything about Greek mythology. So I have to say that's the first opportunity that I had really to study systematically with a teacher. And of course, you know, Greek mythology is everywhere, right? It has a profound influence over Western culture, art, literature. And the other day I was just watching YouTube and I was watching this musical called Hades Town. That also comes from, right, Greek mythology, right? And, you know, in our daily conversation, we also use words related to that, right? Achilles heel, we say Midas touch, and we also, even, you know, as simple as we say to harp at someone, right? Because harpies is actually an ugly creature that would, you know, ruin the food for King, Phineus, I think that's the name of the king, right? So, you know, Greek culture and ancient mythology culture is everywhere, actually, in our daily life. And I also feel that those, you know, mythological narratives are, they're so rich with timelessness, right? And they have this universal theme of, you know, heroism, justice, et cetera, et cetera. So I feel such a strong affinity, towards Greek mythology. Now, when I grow, I would say only after, maybe my mid thirties, I started to read Chinese mythology again, which I should, because this is my own culture, right? And the more I read, the more I find Chinese mythology fascinating. And there's a lot of shared value and shared themes with Greek mythology, actually. And I'm actually thinking about, you know, maybe creating a deck of cards or writing a book about Chinese mythology as well, just because this is the culture I come from. And this is so interesting, because even though, you know, these two civilizations are so far away from each other and we didn't know each other at all, but the lessons and the virtues that we learn from those mythological stories are surprisingly similar.
You know what would be a great idea, Littell, is to create a book that shows you the correlations and commonalities between the myths of the Chinese culture, maybe the Indian culture. I have an example. I have two books titled almost the same. The Parallel Sayings of Lao Tzu, Jesus, Buddha, and Krishna.
Very
so what they do is they take scriptures and statements from each of these masters and put them side by side on the same issue. So, you know, God, love, whatever. And you can see beyond a shadow of a doubt, they're saying the same things with slightly different words. And so I think an amazing concept, should it ever interest you, would be to take the Chinese myth, the Greek myth, the Hindu myth, etc., and show how these things are actually showing that we have a universal archetypal structure, which is what Jung showed beyond a shadow of a doubt.
Yep.
And that we're all, no matter what color our skin or where we're from, we're actually playing out a human divine drama. And there are key facets to every role, which some of us take more, you know, some of us are more like Achilles, some of us are more like Jason in his Argonaut on his ship. Some of us are more like, you know, any of them. As you know, that's the whole point of the astrological reading, is to figure out who you're the most like. And I think that would really be cool, because then anyone from any culture in the world could look at it and see, how am I different, but how am I the same as everybody else?
That definitely has been considered.
That would be called comparative mythology, I think would be what would be really be called.
And I really feel that it's not just about, right, you know, like what you said, it's of course, it's about teaching, you know, people those virtues and values and see how similar we are. And I think this, if our politicians, let's say, and the leaders of our countries actually have a deeper understanding about these similarities, I think a lot of the discussions between them would be smoother, Sometimes I watch, you know, news and I'm watching literally two leaders of a country. They're having very aggressive conversations with each other. And I'm just thinking, do you two really understand what each other is saying? They have interpreters there, of course, but sometimes words don't really translate things.
No.
If you don't understand what their culture is, right? And I give you a very interesting example. When I lived in Japan, yeah, because we were studying translation studies, and we learned this incident between I forgot which U.S. president. Yeah, that was probably happened 50 years ago. At that time, there was some trade friction between Japan and U.S., right? Because the Japanese cars, they were very efficient, you know, and they don't consume a lot of petrol or gas, right? What you say in the States. And so they were having this conversation that the U.S. president was basically saying, you know, this is not okay, right? Because we can't sell U.S. cars now domestically. Everyone is buying your car, and that's not okay. I got to do something about it. And what the Japanese prime minister said at that time, he said, in Japanese, he said, "Zenshō itashimasu." And it means, if you translate this literally, it means I will do my best to solve this problem. That's a literal translation. Now, if I say something to you, to an American, I will do my best. You will really expect me to do everything to resolve this issue, right? But in Japanese, when you say "zenshō shimasu," it means it's a little bit like being evasive. It means I'll look into it. You know, that kind of energy, right? It's like, I'll think about it. Maybe later. I'll think about it. It's a little bit like that. But the translator literally translated this into, "I will do my best." And so then later, when nothing was being done on the Japanese side, right? And that created a lot of misunderstanding. Then the second meeting was like, you know, "I thought you say you're going to do something, but you didn't. What's going on? It's been 6 months," whatever, right? And I think this is about understanding each other's culture. And if we had read Myth from the beginning, we probably would have handled the situation much better. Yeah.
Yeah. These are super important points. And you know, to highlight how important they are today, you know, we're skirting the edge of nuclear weapons every day and, major disasters. And, I mean, if you want to talk about a cultural difference, there's a big difference between the Russian culture and the American culture. So when you get a guy like, you know, I can't even use our president's Biden because he's not even there. I mean, he's a scarecrow for somebody. I don't know who's behind him, but but the point is, you know, if you got a guy like Donald Trump meeting with a guy like Putin, you know, Trump's kind of like a teenager with doesn't really realize you can actually kill people with these guns. You know, you could start a third world war that could wipe us all out.
Yeah.
But ultimately, Trump not really understanding the depth of what Putin's saying, and Putin may not understand what Trump's saying. But as we're describing, at the end of the day, they're both wanting similar things for their people.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
But unable to communicate it in ways that are actually likely to get it.
It says, yeah, sometimes it's so frustrating to watch these videos, right? The conversations between them. It's very frustrating. Yeah. Yeah. I have to make sure that I don't watch news too much. I have to stay away
good
from,
idea.
Right? Because sometimes it's just too, it bothers me, right? And it distracts me. So, yeah.
Yeah, it does. Me too, especially during the pandemic. I felt compelled to watch it because I'm a consultant to so many important, successful people that really depend on my guidance. So I wasn't watching the mainstream stuff. I was watching the reliable stuff like Robert F. Kennedy's Children's Health Defense and other sources of reliable media that I can track myself. But, you know, you see that it's just such a circus of dizzying crap half the time that you kind of have to you can only expose yourself to it for so long before you start losing your center. So I found myself having to limit how much I could take of any of it.
Well, you should have tried Hong Kong. I mean, we had quarantine.
I saw plenty of videos. You guys got it hard.
3 weeks quarantine, stuck in the hotel room. And you're not allowed to go out during quarantine. Can you imagine? You travel overseas for 2 weeks, you come back, and you are locked in the hotel room for 3 weeks. And that's for safety reasons. And that was just what it was. You know, people really had a difficult time.
No question.
With that. Oh, yeah. Difficult. Yeah. Very, very difficult.
Well, Anyway. You couldn't do that to Paul Check. I'll tell you right now.
You break the door.
I would be out of there. No problem.
I'm way more
clever than that. My belief is if a law is unlawful, it is criminal to abide by it.
Understood. Yeah. Well,
so that's how I solved that riddle. But what came up in my mind that I wanted to bring up, this, your myth deck, I think has another important function we haven't talked about, and I didn't put it in the notes. And I'll tell you why I'm bringing this up, because I use tarot. Whenever I'm working with clients, almost always one of the things I track their problems back to is problems with their spouse or their parents or somebody that they have a close, intimate relationship, be it mom, dad, brother, sister, or wife or girlfriend or boyfriend. But usually it's most common, it's the spouse. I've seen loads of back problems and health, digestive, everything, cancer, you name it, that tracks right back to relationship problems that have been going on for a long time. And so one of the things that's been very, very helpful is I do the numerology on each of the key people in the relationship, and I look up their tarot archetype. For example, I'm a 22 in tarot, so I'm a fool personality and an emperor soul path. And when I put these things on the table and talk about the differences, then it's like somebody just turned the lights on. It's like, oh my God, I had no idea. Like, now I understand why they behave that way. And I understand why I behave this way. So oftentimes my therapy includes teaching them how these two different characters from an archetypal perspective have to learn to work together so that they're not getting diseases together.
Yeah.
So it seems to me like because you have your book set up, your guidebook set up so that you can look it up by your birth date and see what your myth is. When I read mine, my God, I was blown away. I don't know if I put that in the notes, but we can talk about that when we get there. But it was, I had Angie, my wife Angie, read it, and she goes, oh my God, Paul, that is so you. And a friend of mine read it the other day, and he's like, oh my God, that's just crazy. That's just like it's talking about you. And the funnier part was, is I was reading your guidebook, and I just went quiet and said to my soul, and another spirit that I work with, is one of these myths, are there any of these myths that are active in my life right now very strongly that I should look into? And the answer came back, Hermes. And the other one is it turned out to be the one for my birth date. Is it asteresis, teaching, or service?
Service. Aristotelus.
Some of these names are hard to pronounce.
Yeah.
So when I read that myth, I'm like, oh my God, this is mind boggling. And I won't tell all about it right now because there's too many things to it. But
yeah.
My point is don't you think couples and family members could use, just like they do tarot, use your myth cards and read each other their myths so that they understand sort of the inner nature of each other?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think this deck of cards can be definitely shared with families and friends. Sometimes I would even encourage maybe as a family, right? Mother, father, children, or we can all sit together and we can just randomly pull a card and then share the story with each other. And usually when we pull a card, when we set our intention there, that card has to tell something about us. And even sometimes, we're not even self-aware, right? About, oh, I have that quality. And I think this could be a very good, time, not just to learn things about ourselves, about each other, but also it could be a very good time for us to connect, right? And so for example, when I'm sitting with you and you are telling me about, the card that you put out and how you feel you connected to that, for me, it's almost feels like you're opening yourself up to me. And this helps us connect, right? So
yeah,
I think this could be very useful in that way.
Hi, everybody. I hope you're enjoying the show. People worldwide are not only finding it hard to find organic and free-range, regeneratively farmed animal foods, but as you surely know,
It's almost impossible to find anything worth eating in stores, airports, gas stations, or even in the stores that should have real food. Additionally, most children are sent to school to eat microwave processed, chemically raised, and chemically laden garbage from school cafeterias or out of their lunchbox, simply because most parents just aren't aware of the dangers of commercial food. But the truth is, there are no shortcuts to health and wellness. Unless, of course, you let Paleo Valley do the work for you. Autumn Smith, founder of Paleo Valley, is not only a mother who understands the importance of feeding children wholesome, clean foods, but is a holistic nutritionist who pours her soul into all Paleo Valley products. And Paleo Valley's meat sticks are made from regeneratively farmed animals that are raised with the highest possible standards of care. Paleo Valley's meat sticks are also fermented, which significantly enhances the nutritional quality and flavor of them. My family and I love them and carry them everywhere we go, be it during rides in the car, outings, ski trips, or we put them in the kids' lunchbox and they love them. In fact, many people I know resort to them as a meal when time is tight on the road or traveling by air. I know of no better portable food or snack food anyone can eat without losing quality or satisfaction, and we love sharing them with our guests and students at our Rainbow Workshops. Paleo Valley's meat sticks come in beef, turkey, and pork maple bacon flavor.
To try Paleo Valley's meat sticks, including the brand new grass-fed venison sticks, and save 15% on your purchase, go to paleovalley.com/check15. That's paleovalley.com/CHEK15, and your 15% discount will automatically be applied when you check out. No promo code is required.
One of the first things I did was read the myths for my children. Mm. And it really resonated with me. You know, Mana's 8, he'll be 8 in a few days, and Zoe's 4.5. But they have very unique, strong personalities. And Angie and I are very strong people. You know, we're very go get it, get the job done, quit whining and get it, make it happen, you know? And so it was very interesting to read their myths. And I read Angie's myth and I read Penny's too. And they were all very in line for sure. And I had a little smile on my face listening to Angie read hers, because there was parts of that myth. Like, did you get that part?
It's a great reflective way, right, for us to use this card for sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And it makes you really pause and be with yourself. I find it has a real effect of almost like you're looking in the mirror, but you're seeing things that you've never seen before. And you're like, how did I look in the mirror for, you know, my whole life and not see this? And all of a sudden there it is, you know, and boom, the light goes off.
I think those stars have always been there. It's just, we just need to make that connection. Ah, this is it, right? That moment, epiphany, yeah.
Yeah. And I think it's very helpful for anyone that's really genuinely interested in spiritual growth, because each of the myths shows you both sides of the character, you know?
Yeah.
You know, you can be very beautiful, but very cunning and deceptive. For example, the myth, I can't remember her name, you will, the girl that was the great weaver, but thought she could outperform the god of art.
Arachne, yes. Yes.
Yeah, Arachne. I mean, there's a great story, right? And you know, she was bullshitting herself. And she found out the hard way.
Yeah, that story is, I think that story has such a profound meaning to us, especially when it comes to developing ourselves in a professional way. Because Arachne is talented, right? The whole story, nobody says she's not. She's actually very, very talented. She was born with that skill, and nobody could, you know, outsmart her. But the problem about her was the arrogance, was that she kind of realized that she thinks that because I'm talented, so I'm above everything. And of course, in the story, it's about her challenging Athena, right? The goddess of wisdom. But I think at our level, it's not about we challenging the so-called god or goddess, but it's more about we have forgot that there is a divine level up there. And sometimes it's about us actually forget about the divine, forget about the spiritual self. And that's why we never look at it. And we're only focused on materialistically what we are creating. And I think that's what is really about. Yeah.
I think though, when we do that, we invite what I call the pain teacher into our lives. It was very interesting because one of my friends and clients was here recently with me. And so I said, you guys got to check this out. And I had her and her husband get their myths out and read it. And she got Arachne because that was based on her birth date. And so, and she's an extremely beautiful woman, and she's probably listening to this too. And I love you. But what was interesting is I could see when she was reading the parts of Arachne that kind of were disturbing, it was making her really deeply reflect. And I was curious, you know, how is this going to play out when she expresses herself to me after reading this myth? And she looked at me and she said, you know, I can't remember her exact words, but it was like, you know, if I'm honest with myself, I do have to admit that I have some of these parts in me. And then she started telling me how they manifest and why they manifest and what were the sort of the events in her life that led her to being that way. But you could see the myth really kind of put her into deep self-reflection, and it made her think, maybe I need to be more conscious of these parts of myself 100%, so that I don't trigger off, you know, things that are uncomfortable in relationships or even friendships. So I think there's just so much value to this. You know, I spent years reading pretty much everything Joseph Campbell wrote. And, you know, Carl Jung is deep into mythology, and Marie-Louise von Franz, who is assistant, she's written the most comprehensive compendium of the understanding and breakdown of fairy tales that's probably on this planet. It's like an 8 or 9 volume, large volume. So I have many of those volumes, and I'm always looking for myths and fairy tales that help me understand what's going on with patients so I can share them with them.
Right.
And they do have quite a profound experience, effect on people, because they're speaking to something much deeper than our ego structure or our surface presentation of ourselves. My next question is, your card deck and guidebook includes 40 of the Greek mythic heroes. I'd love it if you can share or give us an overview of the key male figures and the key female figures that you feel are most relevant to the personal and social crisis we face in the world today. I mean, when you look at what's going on in the world today, which you obviously are hip to, from politics to control oligarchs, powerful billionaires changing everything for their own benefits. And, you know, in the United States, they're wiping out our constitution. They're, you know, undermining the middle class. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. I mean, the whole pandemic and, you know, now world total 17 million dead is the latest tabulations I've seen in from reliable sources and insurance companies and the whole thing. I mean, you when you look at the world, it's like we're going through, well, I tell people we're going through a rite of passage where we have to become adults and start thinking for ourselves and taking care of ourselves and stop turning our power over to authority figures, because this is the story of history. I mean, this goes all the way back. In fact, I've got a book which touches on your culture. I've got a translation. I've got about 20 translations of the Tao Te Ching, but one of my favorites is by Richard Wilhelm, who is a personal friend of Carl Jung's. And in the back of Richard Wilhelm's translation, he has a whole, almost as much as the whole book, probably more, if I remember right, than the actual verses of the Tao Te Ching. But he talks about, throughout the history of China, emperors had a habit of bringing the greatest spiritual teachers of the day in, learning everything they could from them, and then using that knowledge to manipulate people to control them. And so he was showing that this whole control drama has been going on for thousands of years and nothing's changed. And so there's an example of when you see this pattern that people keep getting sucked into this sort of tyrannical ruler syndrome, but keep not doing anything about it. They, you know, they just kind of lay down and become a victim. So to reframe the question, if you look at what's going on in the world, you've got key males and key females. If you said the world is my patient, what myths do we need to wake up to?
Wow. Well, to be honest, I think it's very difficult to just pick one, because I do believe that all the 40...
Well, pick a bunch of them, man.
The heroes and heroines, right? They're all equally important, I think. But If I have to pick one, I think for the male heroes, I will pick Hercules. And for the female heroine, I will pick, especially when you talk about what's been happening in the world, right? I will pick Medea. These two, yeah. Now, of course, you know, like what I said, all the other heroes and heroines are important and we all are learning their lessons. But for me, Hercules is a little, you know, the key word on the card, Hercules, says strength. And this card, it's a little bit kind of like related to the tarot card, number 8, strength as well. And on the tarot card strength, we see usually, you know, when you think of the word strength, you might be imagining a very, let's say, a muscular male figure on that. But on the tarot card strength, it's a woman. And she has this very peaceful facial expression, petting a lion. And that's very much related to Hercules, even though Hercules is a very dominant alpha, right? A male figure. The weakness of Hercules is that he has no control over his emotion. Whenever Hera puts a curse on him or, you know, some magic on him, he will lose his mind. And actually, because of that, he accidentally killed his first wife, right? Mm-hmm. And that's the whole reason why he decided to go to the temple of Apollo and ask for forgiveness and say, what can I do to repent my sins? And the reason was because his force is very primal, right? He can, you know, lift heavy things. But when it comes to tempering our aggressiveness and our emotion, he was not very good at doing that, at least not at the beginning of the story. And I think a lot of the times in what's happening around the world is that we not being able to, let's say, either have control or let's say discipline over our subjective feelings and emotion, because we only see things from our own perspective and we can't drive that. It's almost like it's running wild, right? And that's why there are wars. And, or sometimes this could be about us only thinking, I hope everyone else in the world learns the lessons from the Greek heroes, but I'm not going to learn from that so that I can get what I want. But you guys be the saint. You know what I mean? Yeah.
That's a problem.
Yeah. Exactly, right? So you can imagine if the whole world is everyone around me is a saint and is so virtuous, right? And everyone is doing the right thing. And then if I am being the devil here and I'm, you know, being manipulative, then I can get what I want because nobody's going to hate me. Everyone is a saint. Right. So yeah. I think, yeah, because I think a lot of times when we are making stupid decisions, there's a small part of that thinking, I hope everyone, right, will be a saint. I hope everyone will follow those virtues, but I'm just going to play outside the rule a little bit so that I get what I want and nobody will care. And that makes this world, and you can imagine if everyone believes in that, then everyone will be the devil and everyone will play outside the rule, right? And so, and when we have a leader in the country who does that, you can imagine, right, what would happen because they will not follow the rule.
We don't have to imagine, we're here.
yeah, exactly. Right? We're not going to name
them. The problem
is
we have a lot of leaders playing game.
100%, yeah, right? And the female figure, Medea, was about, you know, the key word for her, the lesson is about revenge, was about her killing her own children because she felt, because her, not really husband, but the man she loved, who made a promise to her actually, betrayed her and everything.
Was that Jason?
Jason, right. I mean, Jason actually, if we read the story, you know, more in details about, you know, the Argonauts, I mean, Jason, yes, he did promise to Medea that he said, I will marry you after we finish this whole thing, right? So yes, it was Jason's fault that he didn't keep his promise. But the reaction of Medea was really gruesome. I mean, we can't imagine a mother would kill her own children in front of the husband to prove to her husband that I hate you, right, forever. And so this is about us constantly looking for the so-called justice, but that justice is our own sense of justice. It's not the universal sense of justice. It's a little bit like you hurt me, so I have to stab you, and so that this is fair for everyone, and I can find my peace through that. And a lot of the wars happening in the world is about that. It's not happening now. It's about generational trauma. 50, 60 years ago, your country did this to my people, and we will never forget about that. And we will always find excuses or reasons to get back at you. And when I do that, I can justify that because you did this to me 80 years ago. So why don't you, right, reflect on yourself first before criticizing me? And that's a very Medea mentality, I think.
Yeah, It's a very good assessment.
It's very sad to see that, I think, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, the pandemic brought a lot of Medea out within families, because anybody that didn't want to get vaccinated for very good reasons got attacked heavily. In fact, I've probably now had at least 20 people write me letters and come to me in person, often with tears in their eyes, saying, I just want you to know, if it wasn't for your podcast, I probably would have committed suicide, because everybody in my family rejected me. I lost my job. I was so isolated and so alone, and I thought I was losing my mind. But you were the only person speaking common sense and giving me a sense of hope that I was making the right decision. And you, because of your podcast, I was able to regain my trust in myself. And so the point I'm making is that you see that right within a family, mothers turning against their children. And, you know, some of the toughest, most sad cases I've had is people that ended up, you know, sharing with their parents that they were gay, and then just getting completely kicked out.
That happens in mythology a lot. Yeah. So this is about parents and children, complexities and, you know, their dynamics, right? And then, for example, earlier we talked about Thetis and Achilles, how much a parent is expecting from a child, right?
Yeah.
I want my child to be divine. But there are also the other way around, is sometimes it's a child who tries their best throughout their life to be divine, to be like their successful parent, but they cannot. And they always feel inferior. Like, for example, in the story between Phaeton and Apollo, some people say it's Helios, yeah, whoever the father is. He wanted to be divine, so he had to drive the chariot to prove that I'm the son of Apollo or Helios, I can do this. But he had a car crash, basically. Right. And the interesting thing is, some people would say, why do you think his father Apollo would let him drive? And I think this happens in our society. This is about guilt. This is about a father never was able to take care of a child. So when the son comes back to him and say, father, I want an expensive car, even though I don't have a license, the dad would buy it for him because he feels guilty. Maybe he didn't grow up with his own son. Maybe he had an early divorce with a wife and he always felt that I need to give more to my son, right? And so we see all these kind of, you know, interesting dynamics actually happening in our real world. It's very interesting. Yeah.
Hi, I hope you're enjoying the podcast today. If you've listened to my podcast before, chances are good you've heard me bragging about how amazing a product Bioptimizer's P3OM probiotic is. It's the ultimate secret weapon for knocking out food poisoning, and I found it super effective for stopping most anything that causes gut distress quickly. For example, a couple of times now I've eaten fish that was in the refrigerator a little too long and got bloating, gas, and intestinal discomfort. As soon as I felt these symptoms coming on, I took 5 capsules of P3OM and continued to eat 5 more with each meal, and the symptoms cleared up in as little as an hour from when I took the first P3OM capsules. My buddy Wade Lightheart, one of the formulators of P3OM, calls it the Navy SEAL of probiotics, and he's right.
Bioptimizers is offering you 10% off P3OM and all their other products. Plus, there are always amazing gifts with purchase. So to find out what these are and save 10% on your order, go to bioptimizers.com/living4D and use the promo code PAUL10 when you check out. That's bioptimizers.com/living4D and the promo code is PAUL10.
One of the problems we're facing is if you take what you've just described and say, okay, this is the kinds of things that are going on in a typical family unit. As we've become more and more industrialized and more scientifically, materialistically oriented, we've become more and more unconscious of these mythological values, facts, and stories that are really there to sort of awaken you to what life can bring you if you behave in certain ways.
Right.
So if you think just like you have a body that's made of a large collection of cells, well, we have a culture that's a large collection of units called families. So if you have the disease of not knowing these very important things about life, and you spread that disease through a culture, it's easy to see that the culture is going to mirror the family and the family is going to mirror the culture. And so I think that we're at a point right now, you know, the old saying, the best way to change the world is to change yourself. That way, you at least you know you've done something. And so I think we're at a time where we really have to kind of come back to our roots and study things like your card deck. But, you know, it's particularly for me, the guidebook. I mean, for me as a therapist, what's more important than pulling cards is reading those myths, because every one of them is a part of our psyche. There's nobody that's free of any of those myths. So I think if we sort of got back to more of a classical education, as it would be called in Chinese, like Confucianism was a classical education type of thing. I studied Confucius too, because I think Confucius has a lot of great stuff to say.
Mm.
But you see, my point is if we start working together to become more conscious of who and what we are and what these archetypal forces are working through us, you know, you can learn to manage your Hercules better. You can learn to manage your Medea better.
100%.
You can learn, you know, all of them. They're showing you, if you have these tendencies, then this is what you need to be aware of, which is, you know, a lot of what astrological readings are. But I think these are better than astrological readings for a lot of people, because very few people actually understand astrology enough to do anything but hear what the report says or the astrologer says, but they don't really know. You know, it's like if a person goes to a doctor and the doctor says, you got cancer, you're going to die in 6 months, but they don't know that that type of cancer has a high incidence of spontaneous healing and that there's many natural treatments for it. And that if they go to another doctor, they could get a different opinion, then they can actually believe it. And the act of believing it can be strong enough to kill them. So the point being is, if we read these myths, we don't need to go to an astrologer to get an interpretation that we don't have the depth of understanding. Because I can tell you right now, I can read these myths to my 8-year-old boy and he will get the point, right? I think that's, you know, as I've been reading your guidebook, I've been having this deep sense, you know. Well, the first thing I did was I ordered another one. And I said, please, because Angie and Penny put the kids to bed at night, I said, please start reading these myths to the kids. And so now they're included in their evening procedures whenever we can do it, because I want to make sure my children understand these things, or the world is going to be a bitch of a place to be. I mean, if you don't understand these things, the world can be like a meat grinder. And it is because of us not understanding the psychological or spiritual processes, which is Steiner's teachings are chock-a-block with what's really going on here, and including a lot on mythology. And my kids are in a Waldorf, they're both in Waldorf school. So they actually paint mythological characters. Mm-hmm. They learn roles and they act out plays and they get read stories. You know, Steiner didn't want kids learning to read until at least 7 years of age, because he said if you teach kids to read before that, it activates their left brain hemisphere too soon and they haven't got the ability to integrate the right and left brain. So he keeps them in the mode of creative expression and storytelling and arts and crafts. And only when their brains are able to naturally integrate the two hemispheres does he start bringing them into the mathematical logical. So they're spending a lot of time acting out plays and making their own costumes. And it's amazing. Like Mana came home the other day and he knitted this beautiful butterfly. Oh, he knitted it by, you know, the teacher taught him how to knit. And so here's my little kid. He's not even 8 and he's knitting. I mean, I don't even know how to knit. And I'm looking at this going like, this is a real education, you know, compared to what they're getting in public school. And so knowing that my kids are getting this mythological underpinning and then having this type of work, I mean, this I feel should be part of our elementary school education, and even up through we can get into the depth of these things.
Yeah, I mean, I really wish, to be honest, I had read studied myth, you know, when I was, you know, really young, but I didn't have that access, right? But if I think in Western countries, this could be much easier, right, for kids to have this access. And I really agree with you on that. I think schools should teach mythology, right? And also, you know, the values or the meaning behind those stories. But definitely, this will be very, very, very beneficial to children, I think.
Yeah, well, you know, I didn't realize I was already hitting on the next question, which is, you know, I was talking about, you know, I've seen a number of presentations by Leonard Sachs, MD, who's an expert on the state of children and young men and women today. And it's, his research is just mind-blowing. I mean, it's just like, wow, our young kids and teenagers and people all the way up into their, you know, mid-30s are really not doing very well, male or female. And so, you know, the evidence that he gives with lots of scientific research points directly at social media, television exposure, gaming, poor quality food, and toxicity of the body, the emotions, and the mind. In fact, he shows evidence that becoming an American is now very toxic. He, for example, shows people that move here from other countries. He said it used to be that if they could learn to speak English as soon as possible, they integrated well and they did better. But now he shows that that's the worst thing you can do. He showed that the research shows that living with an American family and learning to speak the language instead of sticking to your own language and your own culture actually increases the likelihood of all sorts of problems, health, mental, physical, emotional, drug use, etc.
Interesting, so, yeah. Because learning our own culture is a bit like understanding the self, right? But without that, and we, 100%, yeah.
So anyhow, my point with that was just what we were talking about was just, I think, if parents would spend more time and teachers educating kids on these myths, I mean, if we took your myths, for example, and turned them into a video game where the scenarios in the game brought them into face-to-face contact with the challenges and the myths, because hardly anybody will read a book today. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, very few people read books, but we can still deliver it in a medium that they will embrace and I think learn the same things.
Yeah, 100%.
Because
what
Leonard Sachs shows, for example, is that the more hours young men spend playing aggressive games that are, you know, like stealing and warring, the more they become prone to alcohol, drug use, and taking dangerous risks, like driving out of control and just doing stupid shit. So he's showing that they're actually embodying the character personalities of the people, of the image, or the characters in the games they're playing. So if we had a high quality mythologically based video game that was teaching real lessons, it would be natural to suspect that the same qualities would be conveyed, except this time it would be a positive instead of a negative.
Yeah, it's about building our inner hero, right? Someone that we actually want to, let's say, be or emulate. Because,
yes,
right? Then we will learn things from them more easily rather than forcing ourselves to be like that. And I think that's a much better way for young people, like teenagers. I don't know if you had a hero in your, you know, when you were a teenager. But I think, you know, it will be very helpful if we have someone
Bruce Lee.
Bruce Lee, yeah, Bruce there Lee. You go, right?
He was my hero.
Bruce Lee, right? Sometimes this could be actually an actual person, right? An actor, let's say a kung fu star, or you know, for girls, right? This could be about a very strong female entrepreneur that they look up to. And I think those, for me, it was always mythological figures, yeah.
And also Arnold Schwarzenegger. Bruce Lee and Arnold Schwarzenegger were the two human beings that caught my attention the most. You know, I started fighting competitively when I was 12. And then I was also heavy into lifting weights from the time I was 12. So I also really liked that Bruce Lee was actually quite deep philosophically as well. He wasn't just a beat people up guy. He had a brain on him. I mean, he was tapped in pretty good. Well, he had a mind that was much richer than just fighting, you know. So I always found him an interesting character. My next thing I want to talk about, and we've touched on it, if you were a parent of children ranging from 6 years upwards to college age, what myths would you include as essential education for children and young adults, and why? I mean, you could easily say the whole 40 of them, but if there was a few key ones that you think are like pivotal, just like you have your North Star as a fixed star. If you don't know where that's at, then you're lost no matter how much you know about the other stars.
Right.
If you know, just like we have north, south, east, and west cardinal points, if there are cardinal myths, and if there's different ones for males than females, if you were a parent, what would be the cardinal myths that you'd want to make sure your kids understood as soon as possible?
For children, I think, there are a lot of myths actually about youngsters, right? I mean, for example, earlier I mentioned this name, Phaeton. Phaeton was a young boy and who tried, you know, always tried to emulate his father. He wanted to be he wanted to be divine. He wanted to be Apollo or Helios, you know, depending on, you know, the version of the myth. That could be a very good story for children, I think, because Phaeton has ambition. There's nothing wrong with him, you know, wanting to be his shiny father. Sometimes it's about his motivation, right? For example, the reason why he wanted to make sure that he's like his father actually came from a deeply rooted insecurity, because everyone was telling him that he was lying. When he told people, my father is Apollo, everyone was saying, you're lying. You're not divine, right? If you are a god, you should be able to fly. You can't, you're a human. And so a big part of him was growing up with his insecurity that I know my father is divine, but I'm not. And how am I going to prove that? And that, you know, led to the later story when he really approached Apollo or Helios and say, father, this is my only wish. I need to drive your chariot. And it's not about him being divine, but it's about I need to prove it to the world. And I need to prove to everyone who has laughed at me that I can't drive and I'm not divine. And so, you know, stories relate to that, right? And I think the children can relate to those stories a lot, because a lot of us, you know, we were, you know, as children, one of the biggest thing that for us is to know how to build relationship with our parents, even though we are not very conscious about that, because we live with them every day and we don't really spend time thinking about what kind of relationship do I want to build with my parents. And also, to be fair, I think parents play probably a more important role in that, because the children, they are, right, they are the more the passive ones. But I think, for example, when you say, you know, maybe like, for example, your wife would read the stories to the guidebook to your children. And I think when parents are reading those stories, they're also learning things from it. So it's not a one-way education. It's about when they're reading the stories, they also become more aware of children's psychology, how children operate, right, themselves, and what do they desire, and why do they behave in a certain way? Ah, because they are trying to be me, et cetera, et cetera. I think that's how I see this about, you know, the education and the children, young adults with this Oracle deck. Yeah.
Yeah. I personally encourage every listener to purchase your Oracle of the Mythic Heroes card deck and guidebook and begin their study and application of these myths in their daily life right away. That's the first thing I did. As soon as I read a little bit, I'm like, okay, I can't just read this book. I walked right into my library where I keep my very nice moleskin notebooks. I chose a red one. Mostly I use black, but I chose red because I want this to stand out. So if I ever have to find it in a hurry, I can find it.
Thank you.
Because it's very well written. I'm, you know, I can't give you enough accolades for the quality of work that you've done. So, you know, we've talked about all the reasons I think that's important for us as individuals, for children and parents as well. What I'd love it is if you could share some suggestions for how we can all get the most out of using the Oracle of the Mythic Heroes card deck and guidebook. I mean, if what I'm really saying is, look, I'm coming to you, you're the author, you're the master of these teachings. And I'm saying, Latao, how do I get the most out of this as a person? And how do I get the most out of it for my kids? So if you have suggestions for we should be using this beautiful tool you've given us, what are they?
the best way, I think, to start, right, with this Oracle deck is to do a daily card pull. I think that's the easiest way that we can do. Each morning, yeah, draw a card and just take a few moments to reflect on the mythic figure depicted in the card and the lesson, the question it presents to us, right? For example, we could think of a question in the morning. It's not a must, but you know, you could definitely think of something and then draw the cards. The question could be related to your life, your children's life, and how you build your relationship with them. What are the kids going through in school and how do I approach them? What are they truly desiring? Sometimes I think young children and teenagers don't really know how to express their feelings in a rational way. And I think this deck can play a very important role to build this bridge in between. So the reflection that we gain each day through the card pull can give us a lot of insights and guidance that we need. And also, like what I mentioned earlier, parents can incorporate these cards into family discussions, right? Let's say father, mother, their two children all sit together and, you know, let's just talk about what we resonate with the most from the book and what do I feel most drawn to, right? And which mythological figure is me, right? Things like that.
Yeah. Mm. For me, you know, a lot of my teachings are oriented on how to find and work with your soul so you can let your, you know, I teach people how to access their soul, their higher self, and their unconscious so they can access themselves at these three different levels. But I think a great card would just be to ask your soul, for those listening, soul means consciousness within, say, which myth should I be most aware of today? And then go out, read it, and then go out in the world and see why your soul's directing you to be aware of that. And inevitably, I've found whenever I do tarot that way, there's no hard time finding why I'm being told that.
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, we can all find the best way for ourselves, the easiest way for us to access these energies, right? I think for some people, like what you said, for people who are already very advanced in their spiritual studies, right, they can directly tap into their soul searching through these cards. But I think a lot of us, maybe we are still at the very beginning, beginner's level, right? And we're still trying to just to understand, you know, the basic values and knowledge embedded in those cards. And I would say that this deck of cards can be used for people from all walks of life, all different levels. Yeah.
Hi, everybody. I hope you're enjoying the podcast. You know, I love my kids, and I'm sure you love yours too. That's why I'm thrilled to announce that Organifi has just released their new kids line, Organifi Kids, with two initial offers to address the most common needs of children today, Easy Greens and Protect. I can't tell you how important these products are, considering that most children today are not getting enough greens to meet their nutritional needs, not to mention the fact that our children literally are our future. I recently watched an interview with Zen Honeycutt, founder of Moms Across America. She and a panel of experts exposed the fact that most kids' school lunch programs contracted out to fast food corporations, and if that's not bad enough, she ran lab tests on a significant number of kids' school lunches and found that not only was the food very devitalized, but that it was absolutely loaded with high levels of many dangerous pesticides, including glyphosate. As I show in my book, How to Eat, Move, and Be Healthy, most of these pesticides not only disrupt normal hormonal function, they can also cause abnormal growth and development and are commonly linked to cancer, and we have the highest rates of cancer in children in history right now. Organifi's Easy Greens and Protect for Kids are made with organic ingredients and custom formulated for kids 2 and older. Additionally, these excellent, much-needed products are formulated for daily use. The main benefits of the new Kids Easy Greens includes daily superfood greens and gives your child optimal nutritional diversity, and the everyday nutrition in Kids Easy Greens fills common nutritional gaps. Kids Easy Greens is also formulated to support digestive health, which many children need today. The main ingredients in Organifi Kids Easy Greens are nutrient-rich veggies, including carrot, broccoli, sprouts, spinach, and beet, superfoods moringa and chlorella. Digestive support includes digestive enzymes, probiotics, and fiber. Additionally, Organifi's new Protect for Kids offers fast-acting immune support formulated for kids that is gentle enough for daily use. So with Organifi Protect for Kids, you can rest assured their immune system is always being supported. The main ingredients that Protect offers for your kids are orange and acerola cherry, powerful sources of vitamin C and antioxidants. Astragalus, a potent adaptogenic root used to support and boost the immune system. Elderberry, an antioxidant plant nutrient that supports the body's defenses against illness. Propolis, the bodyguard of the beehive, can help naturally prevent sickness and naturally modulate the immune system. These excellent kids' products not only taste fantastic and are low in sugar, they're very easy to use. Just add them to a glass of water or your favorite juice and stir. To get your kids the nutrition and immune support they need and deserve, go to Organifi.com/CHEK20. That's Organifi.com/CHEK20. And on checkout, use the promo code CHEK20 for 20% off. It gives me great joy knowing I can help you find excellent organic nutrition and immune support for your children so they can be as healthy as my kids are.
One of the things I'm going to start doing is I'll have my son, because he's old enough to be thinking at this level. Zoe's still, you know, not even five yet. But I'll say, I want you to pull a card. I might do this in the morning with him. And then I'm going to ask him, where in your life or in any of the stories you've read or movies you've watched, can you identify this character? So Hercules, who do you know that's really strong but tends to use their force instead of being connected to their emotions? Uh-huh. My Absolutely. Luck, he'd say, you, Dad. I'm like, wrong answer.
No, that's funny, actually. No, but that's still an answer, right? That's still an answer. Give you one more chance. Who else?
Yeah, here, pull another one.
Yeah, exactly.
Put that one in the deck.
Yeah.
Gosh.
Yeah.
It's so fun. You know, you got to have fun with kids.
Yeah.
My kids, they teach me so damn much. It's just amazing what they see without all the programming. They see reality much more clearly than we do.
100%, yeah.
And they're brutally honest, too.
See, actually, I didn't grow up in that kind of culture. I mean, my family are very traditional. You know, what parents are saying, it's almost like that's just... You can never challenge that. And I actually had a conversation with my mom. And, you know, my mom, she was very honest. And she said to me, you know, sometimes I have regrets that, you know, because I was the first child and I was also the only child. So she didn't know how to raise a child, right? So I was a little bit like, you know, the mouse in the lab, right? Right. So I was a tester for her, right? Because she didn't know how to raise a child. And she said, you know, actually, we learned a lot of lessons, right? We could have done more. We could have done this and that. And I said, Mom, I don't blame you at all because you didn't know. You didn't know better. And yeah, so I think, you know, we didn't, coming back to what you said earlier, I didn't grow up in that culture where parents would also reflect on, you know, what do I learn from my kids? Only now, right, at an older age, they realize that. But yeah, I hope more parents would be able to do that.
Oh man, I'm always learning stuff. We all are, me, Angie, and Penny. It's crazy. I mean, you know, like, I don't know what it is about Mana, but he spots more rattlesnakes than any of us. Every summer. He's really sharp. Like, there's one time Penny was standing like 2 feet from a big rattlesnake and didn't even see it. And he goes, Penny, there's a rattlesnake right next to you. She's like, what? And she's like, whoa. What? And he's
probably she's psychic.
I think all of our kids see more than we realize. But a lot of parents, a lot of my friends learn a lot from their kids. I think you know, most people I know that have kids are always amazed at what their kids will teach them, and sometimes they come up with very wise statements that you go, where in the world did that come from? You know, like how did you formulate that in your mind?
Exactly. And sometimes, you know, maybe when we were children, we had that. But when we grow up, we lose that, right? We lose those, those amazing qualities. But when we were a kid, we cared less about other people's judgment and we cared less about, the approval that we can get from the society. So we were more pure. And yeah, definitely we as adults, we learn so much from children as well.
Yeah. Well, as we're closing out here, are there any final thoughts or comments that you have that you'd like to share? And, I just considering your skill, your knowledge and your work with myth and where most people are at in the world. And I'm just curious, you know, if you have a message for all of us.
Right. Yeah, I think my message is very simple, is let's all start reading mythology and let's all through those stories, you know, find our inner hero. And they don't have to be about Greek mythology. Find the myth that you are most connected to. For some people, maybe it's about Egyptian, right? Mythology, the god of the sun Ra. And for some people, it's Nordic mythology, right? Stories about Odin. And Loki, right? And because that's, you feel that's your heritage where you feel more connected to. But I think those mythological stories, they're just eternal truths for us. They happened, or maybe they never happened, right? Maybe they were just purely, they came from human imagination, but there has to be a reason there. And like what we both agreed on and talked about at the very beginning of this podcast, that we are still learning those lessons. And we also share very similar experiences with them. And I just think that my final thought about this is, you know, when I encourage everyone to, you know, pick up a mythological book that you feel connected to. And of course, with this Oracle of the Mythic Heroes, it's not a very long book and contains 40 stories. I think this could be a very good starting point for people who are interested in myth.
I find it very enjoyable. I usually take an hour to an hour and a half every morning. I get up real early in the morning and I come in and do my prayers, and then I let my soul guide me to, quite often I'm doing research for chapters in my books and I'm writing and stuff, but I always read something that's just for me because I am very committed to my own growth. And I must have had 100 books stacked up next to my chair because I keep getting books.
I'm like,
I've got to read that. And so I ended up having to, you know, move them because they're just so hard for the cleaning lady. And like this pile of books, people come in and always like, what are you doing over there? I'm like, oh, those are the books I'm trying to read. And so, you know, when I got your book, I really didn't have time to read more.
Yeah, I think for people, like what you said, a lot of people, you know, maybe they don't read a lot. They prefer to, you know, just watch a show and things like that. But I just want to say that this is actually not a very thick book. It's actually very easy to get into. And I remember when I was writing the book, and you know, I was in the process of doing the editing with the editors, and you know, working with Beyond Words Publishing. And one of the things that we on both parts that we wanted to make sure is that this book can be easily understood and it's accessible to people. You know, older people, younger people, teenagers, everyone can just pick it up and really enjoy reading it.
Well, my point being is that I actually not only found it easy to incorporate into my morning, even with all my studies, because I'm actually writing it out. I'm writing out the key points of each myth. I'm writing out the key teaching points, and I'm writing out things that relate to me or things that I think might be important if I'm coaching a client or what might make me want to refer back to this myth. That's just sort of my way. That's what all these notebooks you see all over the place. I got hundreds of them. But my point was for the listener is you can actually read one of these myths in a few minutes. What'll probably take longer than the reading is the experience that happens when you read it, because I found myself being put into repose, you know, almost like a contemplative meditation where my mind starts linking up to all the times in my life where I behave that way. You know, like, where's the Hercules in me? Where's the Achilles in me?
Yep.
You know, where's the Midas in me? You know, it's just like, it really does open the door to honest contemplative meditation. And I think that's how we become more conscious of ourselves.
Yep. Absolutely, yeah. 100%.
So where can people find the deck? I mean, I know where I got it, but I want to give you a chance if there's a specific place that you'd like to people to get it so you can make more money than on Amazon or?
Well, I think definitely, I mean, if Amazon is definitely a well-known website, right? A lot of people buy stuff from there. So you can find Oracle of the Mythic Heroes easily on Amazon. You can just search the name or you can search my name, Letao Wang, L-E-T-A-O-W-A-N-G, and you will be able to find this Oracle deck. You can also purchase it from the publisher's website, Beyond Words Publishing. They will also, you know, be able to do the shipping for you. Yeah.
And why don't you share what services you offer? Because you do actually do coach people online.
Correct.
And
yes.
You can take people from all over the world. And, you know, I can tell you from reading your book, I mean, anyone listening to this now knows you're a deep guy and have a lot to offer. I mean, I was really impressed reading. I think one of the best parts of your guidebook is the actual teaching sessions and your case histories. And I think a lot of people might like to get a mythical reading and just, or even have you do various interpretations for them. And I really feel very good about directing people to you because I have a very strong inner compass and I sense the real deal when I'm with them. And I've enjoyed every minute I've been able to spend with you. How old are you, Letao? Because you sure have a hell of a lot of wisdom for a guy that looks like he's not very old.
I'm 40, actually. Yeah,
40. Okay, yeah.
Yeah,
You look like you're about 32.
Well, I think it's the video filter.
Yeah.
Now, well,
keep it up.
Thank you.
I don't think so. Yeah, you know, yeah, 40. You know, you've had time to really digest some stuff. I can remember when I was 40. That was a while back.
So people can find me actually also through my website www.thehealingkingdom.com.
The Healing Kingdom.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, and people can contact me through my through my website, email, and they can book a Zoom session with me. Yeah.
Great. Are there other services what specific services do you offer?
So my service is called spiritual counseling. And like, for example, you know, a lot of readers, maybe on their website, they will say something like, if you want astrology reading, it's this, right? You click here, or you can have a tarot reading with me, or you can do this and do that, or there's a Reiki session. For me, I don't really separate these things because the purpose is it's about understanding the client's psychology and help them, you know, right, overcome their blockages. And so we don't really choose what method for the session. Literally during the session, the first 10 minutes is about, you know, conversation and diagnosis, understanding what's happening. And then based on my intuition, I will choose the right method to work with a client together.
Good.
Their issues, right? So we call this a spiritual counseling. And that's the service. Instead of saying we do tarot, we do astrology, we do numerology, it's for me, it's all just different tools that we pick up.
Yeah, that's how I work too.
Yeah.
And do you normally work with clients, like maybe if someone's going through a midlife crisis or depression, do you work with them over a period of time, or are you typically just doing a reading and that's it?
No, so because the counseling usually requires more than one session, right? But
of course,
for the third session, usually for the first session, I will let my clients to get a feeling about how it feels to work with me. And then, of course, they feel that, you know, I'd like to talk to you more on a regular basis. And I think this is for me. And I like this feeling. I like our energy together. Then usually clients will come back to me. Let's say they can do either once every 2 weeks or once a month. They want to, you know, work together and think depending on their schedule. Yeah. I've had, to be honest, a lot of my clients, really, they have worked with me for years. And I think you can definitely resonate with that. You see their progress. You see how they have developed and how they have evolved from, you know, years ago. And it's such a huge reward, right? To us to see that progress.
It is. And, yes. It's,
yeah,
it is.
Yeah. Sometimes you also see clients who don't evolve.
Well, that's,
years.
you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink, right?
Yeah.
We all have those. Yeah. And that's why I tell my students when I'm teaching, remember there's four kinds of patients in the world. Those that listen, do what you guide them to do, who are ready to heal. Those that have egos so big they'll never listen to you and they'll always just keep doing what they were doing and complain to you that nothing's working. Those who are so identified with their disease or their pathology that they don't want to heal because they won't know who they are without their pathology, and they're often getting mileage out of it. They're getting power out of it.
Right, right.
And the fourth, those whose time it has come to die, and no matter how good you are, you won't save them.
Interesting. Interesting.
And I've looked at this for many, many years, and that's pretty much the four kinds of people that I've seen in the world.
I hear you. Yeah. And of course, I think part of the thing is, you know, as a counselor, or let's say as a therapist, right? And what we can bring to the table, that's definitely a big part of it. But this is really a teamwork. This is 100% a teamwork. And and so, you know, definitely I've seen clients who I think some clients, they are really eager to work with you. And that's great. That's beautiful teamwork. And you see improvement on both sides. It's not just about them improving, but as a therapist, we also gain so much wisdom from them. And that's just such a beautiful thing, you know, to see. But sometimes you just realize that it's just, they're not changing, they're resisting, and it's just straining for on both sides as well. So I think, you know, if someone who is listening to this podcast, who is looking to make a transformation in their life, who is really ready to work on those, and I would definitely say that, and if you meet a great therapist, this is going to be such a mutually empowering experience.
Yeah, it is very mutual. There's, you know, I don't think you can really do therapy without it being a team effort. It has to, both. If the therapist isn't willing to grow, then they're just turning the client into an object that they're going to move around like a hockey player moves the hockey puck, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
So, well, fantastic. Latao. I mean, I've been waiting for this. I wanted to just, for me, it's just an excuse to have a good rap session with you and share it with everybody. So, you know, what a great joy. And I know you've got another book you're working on, so I'm super excited for that one to come out so I can read it and get you back on here and talk about that. You want to tell us a little snapshot of that one?
Sure. So the next oracle deck is called Oracle of the Celestial Deities. And that oracle deck is going to be focused on the immortals, right? Which is different from the mythic heroes. Mythic heroes is more about the mortals, the human stories, and deities is about, you know, the gods and the goddesses that we all know. And Oracle of the Celestial Deities will come out onto the market in June this year. So yeah,
well, good.
I will definitely keep you guys updated. Yeah.
Yeah, send me a review copy if you could, and I'll
will do
get 100%, through it, and then we'll have another good rap session. I'll read it as fast as I can.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me today, Paul.
My pleasure.
I'm really grateful. Yeah, and it's been such an honor for me to, you know, to go on your podcast and be a guest, and I really enjoy you know, all the things that you have sent through to text messages, you know, the articles that you encourage me to read. Thank you so much.
You know what, man, I'm proud of you. For a guy that's 40, you've covered a lot of ground. You know, you've really done a good job of really harvesting your potential. And I'm really looking forward to what you bring to all of us in the future. You know, it's lovely when you get to meet someone who's aligned with their soul. You know, it's clear to me that you're not a lost soul. You really have your path. I can feel the universe is working right through you. And it's as though you're just this beautiful cosmic gardener. You know, you're helping us all grow. And I just encourage you to just keep being you just like you are. It's really beautiful to see. I hope, you know, that more people can be inspired to be more like you, my friend. So I'm proud of you. Keep it up.
Thank you so much. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And and I hope all the audience will also, you know, I hope this podcast will encourage all of them to continue their spiritual journey and to always find the best,
too.
Right, the better version of themselves. Yeah. And I hope everyone have a great journey ahead of them. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Letao. And thank you to my sponsors for all your great products. Thank you to all of you for joining me and Letao today. I hope you found the dialogue and the conversation, the stories exciting and interesting. I hope you really do get his Oracle of the Mythic Heroes card deck and guidebook. It's really fascinating for everybody in the family. Thanks for anything you buy from the sponsors that supports the podcast so I can keep finding geniuses like Letao to share with you. And I will do my best to bring you something super interesting and cool next Tuesday. I don't know if I can top Letao, but I'll see if I can at least bring somebody at that level for you. So lots of love, and I will talk to you next time. Keep doing your best out there in the world. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Living 4D with Paul Cech and today's guest, Letao Wong. You can get Letao's card deck, Oracle of the Mythic Heroes, on Amazon at bit.ly/mythicheroes. That's bit.ly/mythicheroes. You can connect with Letao on Instagram at Letao Wong or on his website, thehealingkingdom.com. Catch up with Paul on Instagram, TikTok, and Threads at paul.check, on X at paulcheck, or on his YouTube podcast channel, youtube.com/living4D with Paul Cech. You can watch more on Paul's blog at paulchecksblog.com or visit the Czech Institute site at czechinstitute.com to find Paul's e-learning courses, advanced training programs, and to learn more about the Czech Academy. You can read the show notes and find links to all the resources mentioned in this episode at czechinstitute.com/podcast. Again, a big thank you to our premier sponsors, Bioptimizers, Organifi, and Paleo Valley. We could not produce this podcast without their support. As you heard in this episode, all our sponsors offer special discounts for our listeners. So please visit the show notes page at czechinstitute.com/podcast for links and details. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please consider leaving us a 5-star rating and a warm review on the podcast platform of your choice. This podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, Audible, and YouTube.